exercise class in the next room or something. Because there were actually, when they got in there, there were two people up on the podium purporting to chair the meeting. One was a Democrat and one was a Republican. And they were both up there trying to run the meeting and thinking that they were running the meeting. Well, the Democratic chairman entertained a motion to adjourn the proceedings until the next day, and in his opinion, that motion was passed. So the Democrats left the chamber, but the Republican chairman of the meeting continued up there, and he continued to run the meeting, and they had more business that day. The next day, apparently, the Republicans got up earlier, so the Republicans convened their meeting in the morning, and then the Democrats all came to the Capitol in the afternoon. They came into the room, they found the room occupied, so they just went down the hall to the other chamber, and they had their own meeting. So that's the way it continued for the entire convention. There were two conventions going on, the Republicans in one chamber, the Democrats in the other chamber, both carrying on their own meetings. The proceedings of both of them were published. So if you ever need to consult something about the framers' intent of the Minnesota Constitution, there are two sets of volumes, one for the Republicans and one for the Democrats, that you have to consult. Now, it's not known exactly how this happened, but apparently some cooler heads did manage to prevail. Because despite the fact that these two separate bodies were meeting in two separate rooms with totally separate proceedings, they did manage to come up with documents that were very, very, very similar. So we do not have two totally disparate constitutions. We have the Constitution. And I forget which is which, but one of them is printed on white paper, and one of them is printed on blue tinted paper. Documents. And even though they are very, very similar, they are actually not identical. There are minor differences, usually in punctuation. The moral of that story is that if you're ever construing some provision of the state constitution and the placement of a comma is important, which sometimes it is, you want to make sure that comma exists in both documents. So, in the first volume of Minnesota Statutes Annotated, if you look in there, there is the Constitution, printed in a normal typeface, but there are also there are copies of the two original handwritten documents. So if you really need to dig in to get the meaning of some phrase in the Constitution, you have to consult those two handwritten documents. And regardless of what your political persuasions are, you have to give both of them equal standing. And the reason for that is, and I forget which was which, but again, the procedure is that the Constitution has to be transmitted back to Congress, and Congress has to give its stamp of approval and approve the Constitution. And upon approval, that is when statehood takes effect, as soon as that bill is passed. Approving the Constitution. Well, one of these two documents was transmitted officially to Washington, to Congress, to be the Constitution of the state. And Congress debated that. And Congress put its stamp of approval and sent it back. Except they sent back the other one. They did not send back the same copy that had been sent to them. They sent back the other copy. So somebody apparently had surreptitiously gotten this other document to Washington. So they received one, approved it, and sent the other one back saying that this has been approved. So there is, they do both have equal standing, so they do have to be consulted. And so if that comma, the placement of a comma is key, you can't place too much weight on that, if it's missing the other one, well, it couldn't have been too important then, so if it wasn't in both of them. So anyway, you do have to consult ratified in 1974. So when did the 1974 Constitution take precedence? I bet somebody was jumping if they asked that. Well, yes, indeed. The Minnesota Constitution, if you look in the Minnesota statutes, you will say, you know, the Constitution of 1974. So you think they would have, you know, in 116 years, you think they would have worked out some of the bugs. Well, they didn't, because in 1974, state constitutions get kind of messy, you know, because you have an amendment for the lottery, you have a stadium amendment, and, you know, all kinds of things. And, you know, so they get kind of messy, so they just have to be cleaned up. And that's really what happened in 1974. They cleaned it up just by, you know, putting things in a little better order and making it easier to read, and in some cases, renumbering the section numbers. So the 1974 Constitution was not intended to affect any substantive changes from the 1858 Constitution. And so the Minnesota Supreme Court stated here, the revision and restructuring of the state constitution in 1974 was never intended to change long-standing constitutional interpretations. As the comments by the study commission indicate, even if inadvertent changes were made in 1974, this court should revert to the meaning of the original document. And of course, when they say document, they really mean document. So again, even though the constitution was cleaned up and recodified in 1974, you still have to look at those two original 1858 documents to get the actual meaning of it. So, moving on, just kind of talk next, and now we'll get to some of the stuff that maybe for a while is merely interesting. If you're in the library, it's interesting occasionally just to pull down some of those old volumes. Because you sometimes get an interesting snapshot of some of the historical stuff that was going on, kind of get a picture of things, you know, seeing the world through the eyes of lawyers over 100 years ago. So sometimes they're just interesting to look at. The first, all of the decisions of the Territorial Supreme Court are contained in Volume 1 of Minnesota Reports. So it's about a nine-year period, and there's a book this thick, and that's how many decisions the Supreme Court has put out. I think these days they probably put out a volume that thick one, you know, every week or something. So, but it took 9 years to fill up a volume. And so that first volume covers the territorial period. And there's sometimes kind of interesting to look at. And then the other thing to keep in mind, remember, too, is that the territorial Wisconsin decisions are really just as binding as those, because that's really the territorial Supreme Court is really Wisconsin is really the predecessor of the Minnesota Supreme Court. So those might have some relevance, and those other states as well. And I have I forget which volume numbers, but I think I have the materials one volume numbers of Wisconsin remarks covering the territorial period. But again, all those territorial cases from Minnesota and from those other states, they're old cases, so they're just as binding as any case from the state Supreme Court. Again, some of them are merely interesting. One example I quoted in the materials here is the case of the Dr. Franklin. And this is the one, again, if your client has some logs and somebody crashes their steamboat into the logs, the owner of the steamboat does have to pay for the logs. So that's the substantive point of law in that case. Probably doesn't come up too often. In fact, I checked that it hasn't been since 1906 by another court. And probably won't be again, because that doesn't come up too often. But it's just kind of a good example of some of those snippets of earlier cases that you look at to kind of get a feeling for what life was like here. And remember that